Welcome into the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft. It's a CBS party we got going on here. We have Sam Vecini from the college basketball side and James Herbert from the NBA side helping us out with the Raptors. James, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I am doing great. Let's start here. You have to rank these guys in order of most likely to be on the team to least likely to be on the team. Kyle Lowry, okay. DeMar DeRozan, Jonas Valanciunas.
Oh, man.
Or you could just say the question's stupid and all of them are going to be on the team. That's also an option.
I think all of them are individually likely to be on the team, but I think like it's a good question because the way that the Raptors lost in the playoffs, it feels like you can't bring back, like you can't do what they did last year. You can't bring back the same group. You probably shouldn't bring back the same starting five. I think of those guys, Valanciunas is young and good and thus should have a lot of value at the end of his rookie contract. DeRozan had an awesome end of the regular season, but then was kind of taken out of his game in the playoffs. Lowry, I mean, honestly, the guy played like a superstar for part of the year and then just totally fell off a cliff through the second half, whether that was exhaustion or whether that was, being hurt and banged up at the end of the season. But like in the playoffs, he was a disaster. And this team really needed him to be, like, the reason why they were good. A lot of that was just that Lowry was amazing the first part of the season. I think Valanciunas is probably the safest, even though he has a lot of value, just because I think you don't find young big guys that are that good very easily. And then I'd say, this is tough, Lowry or DeRozan. You know what? I think it's Lowry and then it's DeRozan. And this kind of bums me out because I'm a guy who, I've seen DeRozan since he was a skinny little rookie and he was a project. And he just came in and the whole story about him was, this guy, he works so hard. It doesn't matter if he's struggling right now, he's going to get better. And you just kind of saw it. Like, you just saw him get better every year. You saw him become an all-star and play for Team USA. And he still has some weaknesses in his game, but I think it would just kind of be a bummer to see him get traded away after going through the bad times and then seeing the team ascend to sort of goodness. And I think it's weird that I can't say, like, this is a really good team because of the way they lost. But I think he wants to stick it out. He wants to see this team advance in the playoffs. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure the organization is married to anybody in the starting lineup, and I think he's still on a deal it was a deal that was made fun of at the time when he signed it, but I think now it looks pretty good, and he would have some value out there. So I'm not saying I think he'll get traded, but I think of the three, he's probably the most likely.
How is he viewed by fans in Toronto?
I think he's still somewhat of a divisive player. I mean, if you go to the games, he's the guy who's introduced last and he gets a huge ovation. And I think in general, fans, he's respected and people enjoy him and they want to see him succeed and people like him. But I think there is definitely a segment of the fan base that is still like, he's not a good three-point shooter. He should be better at ball handling. He should be better at passing. He should be a bit better on defense. And I think he's made strides in all of these areas. But I think there are still, a certain segment of the population, especially on the internet, where everything is, it's like we want shots at the rim and we want three-pointers. And he still takes a lot of long twos. He still takes a lot of contested shots. And some of them are still early in the shot clock. And I think that part of his game does annoy some fans, even if they, I don't think anybody has a bad word to say about his work ethic or how he's developed, and I think those same people will praise him for how he gets to the line so well. So I think it's tricky. I think you'll find a lot of people who are really big fans of him, and then you'll see other people who are just like, yeah, but I'm not in love with his game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that pretty much makes sense and pretty much goes with what I think of him. The bigger question for me is whether or not you think Amir Johnson is back. I think that all three of Lowry, Valanciunas, and DeRozan will be back, but where they can make changes this offseason seems to me to be in the power forward and small forward spots, or even if you want to, you know, play DeMar DeRozan as a, you know, nominal three and get a shooter next to him and Kyle Lowry in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
What do you think happens with Amir Johnson? Because Johnson's shown some kind of different skills over the past year that makes you think that even though he is, what is he now? He's probably 27 or so, right?
Something like that, yeah. He came into the league really young.
He just turned 28.
He's 28, just 28 in May.
So he's still developing and still learning. I mean, he shot 41% from three this year on very limited attempts. Like, if you can make him a stretch four, that offense is, I don't want to say it's limitless between his defense and his shooting ability, but that offense would really kind of kick up a gear if they can get a small forward in there. So what do you think ends up happening with Amir?
Yeah, it's weird because he has, you know, he got more confident taking the three-point shot. It takes him forever to get it off, so he needs to be, like, wide open and dared, essentially, to shoot it, but he made them. So that is an expanding part of his game. I think you saw this year, I think for the first time, really, you saw a slippage from him defensively. He's always been this underappreciated guy around the league. He's been one of the best plus-minus players. He's been one of the Raptors' most valuable guys for years, and I still think he is. I just think he's such a good, smart defensive player, but he's been banged up, and he gets hurt every year. And you look at, he's had so many ankle injuries. He's had a lot of surgeries. He ends up having all sorts of problems, and just, I'm not sure if the team is going to be ready to invest in him again long term. And I think this is, at the same time, at 28, this might be his last real chance to sign a big long-term contract. So it might be the time where a team that is, you know, analytics savvy or whatever, snatches him away, and he takes the money and he goes. I could certainly see that happening, and it would be a little bit weird because him and DeRozan are the longest-serving members of the team. It's been so long that he's been the guy that, when the guards are getting blown by on the perimeter, he's the one making up for their mistakes. He's the one playing great pick-and-roll defense and boxing out and setting amazing screens. Like, he does all of that sort of non-flashy stuff that good big men need to do. Doesn't put up big numbers most of the time, but has always just been willing to quietly do his role. And I think he's a guy that, you know, if you'd asked him a year ago, would have said, you know, I want to stay in Toronto forever. I want to finish my career here. But with the way the season ended, I'm just not sure how much the organization is necessarily going to be willing to pay him, especially because they have a guy, Patrick Patterson, who's there that could step in and theoretically start as a stretch four. The two of them actually played really well together last year. But I'm kind of the mind that all of the free agents, if they receive big contracts elsewhere, the Raptors might be willing to end up watching them leave, which doesn't necessarily mean it's their fault. I mean, the only thing that was really wrong with Amir Johnson this past season is that he was banged up, so there were a lot of nights where he was a step slower than usual defensively. But he still played through everything. He gave it all he had, and he was still a guy that they really needed. He was a guy that they were, when he wasn't on the floor, there was a noticeable dip defensively. I could see him leaving. I think they would keep him at the right price, but it's just, we're at the point where I think if some team comes in and is willing to take the risk on the injuries and pay him a big salary, that this might be it for him.
Okay, price point time for Amir Johnson. 4 years, $44 million. Yes or no?
I think it depends on the situation your team is in. If you think this is the piece to get you over the hump, I think that's
well, for
a totally
Toronto,
fine
I mean.
Deal. Oh, if you're Toronto, I think they might let him walk for that, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it pains me to say it. I, as a media person, I like dealing with him. I like watching him play. I think he's been a huge part of this team for a long time. But I think at that number, they might let him go, which sounds weird because, like, his advanced numbers are still good, and the salary cap is rising. But, I mean, some of this depends on the medical information they have, because they would know his health better than anybody. But I think with the way that he's been banged up, they might say, well, we've seen his best years already, if that makes sense.
The only person we haven't mentioned in the starting lineup is Terrence Ross, so let's bring him up. Well, still 24 years old, but there are scenarios where guys in the NBA just don't improve on a gradual basis as they get older. Do you see him as someone who's stagnated a little bit and worried about that progression, or do you still think there's room for more?
He definitely stagnated. I mean, the regular season that he had was disappointing. I didn't think he was as bad as everybody said in the playoffs. I think the whole team was really bad in the playoffs, but I wouldn't pin that on him. Look, I think this is a guy that, if you just look at his athleticism, his potential, and you watch his good games, you could get enamored with him very quickly. And I think he has a really pure stroke. When he's engaged defensively, he can be good on that end. He too often loses his focus on that end. He's extremely inconsistent. I think he still needs to get stronger. He still needs to be able to take more contact around the rim and be more aggressive driving to the basket. But he's the guy that I think has a whole lot of potential at 24 years old. And I think he should have some value around the league. And that's the guy that I think if anybody is going to be traded on this team, it's probably him, just because I think this roster needs to be shaken up a little bit. And while there's room for him to get better, and he's definitely shown signs as well as shown like frustrating things in his time in Toronto, I think if they can trade him for a piece that they know can change the team, or a piece that they know can step in, maybe trade him for somebody that's going to come in and take that starting power forward spot that might be open if Mayor Johnson leaves, or trade him for somebody who is a more traditional three, because I think some of their problem is that DeRozan and Ross are both, they don't have the longest wingspans in the world, and they're both around 6'6", 6'7", so when you play against a guy that's, you know, there's a lot of small forwards in the NBA that are like 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", now with crazy long arms, and the only guy that they could really use to defend him was like a James Johnson. I think those guys, that was sometimes a problem. So I could see Ross being moved. I personally am of the mind that there's a very good chance that they'll move him, and then he'll go somewhere else, and then he'll look really good, and they might feel bad about it. But it might also be a situation where if he's going to take that leap, it just might be one of those things where that's not going to happen in Toronto, and he needs a fresh start. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've never been the highest on Terrence Ross. Personally, I think that you're right. I think that they could use a more traditional three to where, someone that can guard bigger threes, someone that, can do different stuff than Terrence Ross does. Because Terrence Ross is largely a perimeter player, and that doesn't really jive with what DeMar DeRozan is. I think they overlap a little too much.
Yeah, I think even when they drafted Ross, part of that was like they wanted to push DeRozan. They wanted those guys to compete, and they are now the starting wings on this team, and that seems like this. I mean, it has worked for at some times because they're both really athletic, but it hasn't really been that like, oh, we're gonna run and punish you with our athleticism type team. Like that's not really what they've done. So it's a situation where I think they wouldn't move Ross for nothing. They wouldn't just dump him. Depending on his value around the league, if they can get like a proven player or just somebody who fits better with the team, I could see it happening because I think they did want to see more from him last year for sure.
Do you think that the Brazilian contingent in Toronto will ever make an impact?
I want to see them get a chance next year, that's for sure. I thought there were times where they could have, in the regular season, just thrown Bruno in there or thrown Bebe in there instead of Chuck Hayes or whatever and just sort of seen what they could do at least. I mean, these are two guys who only really played in garbage time. I think they are much more invested in Bruno than they are in Lucas Nogueira. And I think there's a hell of a lot of potential there. It's really hard to project what they'll look like in 2 or 3 years, especially without, at least seeing, like, how are they going to be in summer league, Like, I want to see that. I want to see how they do there. I think this is a big summer for both of them. But I think you have two really long dudes. I think Bebe can at least be a shot blocker. I think he needs to get stronger still, but I'm not sure how strong he'll ever be. With Bruno, I think it's pretty normal that at his age he's still so skinny, but I think he's a really good shooter right now, just in the little that I've seen and watching like the three-on-threes that they do after practice sometimes, and watching his stroke when he's warming up before games and stuff. He's, for a guy who's, 6'10 with like a 7'7 wingspan, and he can shoot threes like that, it's just the raw tools that he gives you, you don't find them very often. I mean, this is a guy that can theoretically protect the paint because of his length and also contribute in space to the floor. So I think there's a lot of potential there. But I think, we always think of that 2 years away from 2 years away line that Fran Fraschilla said at draft time. And I think that might have been an exaggeration. I think you want to see something in his, halfway through his second year and his third year or whatever. But you obviously have to be really patient with him because he was really raw when they drafted him. I think from everybody around the team and what they say about him and the players themselves, they all respect how hard he works. And I think they kind of know that his potential is through the roof. But I think at a certain point, you have to kind of throw him to the wolves and see what he can do. And he just never got that chance last year at all.
How is his adjustment to American culture? Because I know that from talking with George DePaula, who was a draftable prospect this year before withdrawing. Yep. He actually is the same agent, I believe, as Bruno, and they used the opposite strategy this year that they did with Bruno last year, where they sent him to every single event, and it kind of tanked his draft stock after teams met with him and realized that A, he's not particularly athletic, and B, he is going to have a lot of problems with language. So how is Bruno's language and how is his cultural adjustment going?
Well, his English got a hell of a lot better throughout the year. They had him taking English lessons as soon as he got to Toronto, last summer. And he'd already done some of that at home. And I think he's one of those guys that I think he sometimes pretends to know less English than he does. He's not super comfortable doing interviews, but I mean, you saw him come out of his shell. Him and Bebe hang out a lot, and they'll speak Portuguese together and whatever. And I think it might have been a bit different if they weren't together. Whether you think that's good or bad, I don't know. But I think they're very close, and that was kind of at least a safety net for him. And I mean, he could speak Spanish with Gravis Vasquez and stuff too, but. He worked out. He did one-on-one workouts with James Johnson pretty much every off day, and even after games they would go up to the practice court. It wasn't he was just secluded from the rest of the team. Guys tried to help him out, guys tried to get him adjusted, but I think away from the court he didn't have a whole ton of friends here. He hung out with Lucas a lot. I think it's going to be a big cultural adjustment for anybody that came in at his age, and especially from a different culture, but I think he did like it. I think he dealt with it pretty well, at least from just interacting with him in the locker room and how everybody seemed to talk about him. I think he's making the transition, but I do think, it was a big thing. He wasn't super duper comfortable in English when he came over, but he's made huge strides in that area, and I think I think you'll see him open up a bit more as far as the second season goes. He's not like Bebe. Bebe is just the life of the party. Will joke around with anybody. Just a huge smile every time you see him. It's just Bruno's definitely the quiet one, but I think he doesn't like it when you call him shy because that's not how he sees himself. And I think he did get less shy as the year went on.
Is Toronto a good city for kids in this type of situation?
I think so. I think, just the fact that, I mean, especially if you're Brazilian, there's a little Portugal basically where there's a bunch of, you can go in and speak Portuguese and whatever. I think this is a city that in the past when Brian Colangelo was the general manager of the team, he was talking about how this is an advantage for certain free agents. Hudo Turkoglu wanted to come play here and Roshan Nesterovic wanted to come play here because it felt like a European city and stuff like that. It's obvious it's a very multicultural place to be, and I think players in general like that, and I think if you're from another country, then Yeah, like it could be more appealing. Gravis Vasquez has essentially become like a spokesperson for the city of Toronto now. Like he freaking loves it here. Like he's there. Like the Pan Am Games are here this summer, and he's like a representative. And he will he's been raving about the city since he got here. So I think if you're a young player making the adjustment to any American city or to Toronto, it's going to be a big thing, but perhaps in Toronto it is a little bit easier.
One other current roster question before we start looking at some options with the draft pick. Lou Williams is an unrestricted free agent. Do you think he will be a priority to bring back, or is that someone who's kind of on the back burner?
I think they'll try to bring him back. I think the issue is, again, cost, because this is a guy that, I mean, it's a great story. Like, he came back from that ACL injury and had essentially a career year last year and won the Sixth Man Award and just saved the Raptors on so many occasions with his offense and hitting big shots and coming up with big games when other guys weren't hitting. Like, he played a huge role on this team. They would have been significantly worse if they hadn't made that signing. So I think they realize that he's very valuable to them. But at the same time, if all the talk at the end of the year from Dwayne Casey wasn't just talk and he actually wants to make his team less ISO heavy, then, you know, Lou Williams is an isolation player. That's what he does. He will get you buckets. But if you want this free-flowing offense type deal, then he might not be your guy. So I think, you know, they would like him. He's a priority. He might be the biggest priority of the free agents, but again, like, it's weird. I would have had a different answer for you before they got swept in the playoffs, because when he accepted his six-man award, he was even saying to us, like, I can't see why it wouldn't get done. I love it here. This is, like, essentially saying this is where he wanted to be, but I just think based on how the season ended, I don't think there's a guarantee that anybody will be back. So if somebody offers him that big contract, which sort of like Amir, it's actually very similar to Amir. These were two guys who were two of the last high school players to come in the league. They're about the same age. And if he's going to get that big contract to cash in, and after coming back from that injury and proving that he's still a productive player in the league, then I think he has to take it, whether it's from here or somewhere else. So it just sort of, the market will dictate what happens there. But again, I think they'd like to have him back.
As we transition to the pick now, 20th, and with how our draft has played out, I actually think it's a pretty obvious choice who you take here.
Okay.
I would go, I think Trey Lyles would be a really good fit, considering especially if Amir Johnson leaves. It's a position in need. He's a different player than Patterson, and he has a little bit more potential for offensive versatility, and he has some high upside. That with his age, coming from Kentucky, maybe there's some more to his game that we haven't seen that the Raptors could use. So I think that's a pretty logical pick here. Is that kind of what you were thinking, or are you going in a different direction?
Yeah, that was my pick. You ruined it. I can't surprise you guys. Trey Lyles is my pick, and I like it for a bunch of reasons. I like it. Yeah, I like that this will be, like, every year there's talk here, like, when are they going to draft a Canadian? And it's like, this is the right Canadian because he's like a fake Canadian. Like, his mom's from Saskatoon and his dad was American and he was born there, but he basically grew up in Indiana and, like, he's played for Team Canada. So he has, like, a connection to the country and he can do the interviews and be nice and talk about all that, but he's not going to, I don't think he's going to feel the weight of the country on his shoulders. I don't think it's not like he's going to have a million family members at every game and 1,000 media requests to talk about his connection to the city of Toronto, because he doesn't really have a connection to the city of Toronto. So I think that's,
I can't wait till people that are like Toronto beat writers and stuff ask him about the connection he feels to Canada, and he's just going to be like, dude, I'm from Indiana.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, he'll play the game. Like, he does feel half Canadian because he is, like, he's played for the country before. Like, so he'll be able to do that. It's just, it won't become this whole, like, pressure of playing for your hometown thing, because, like, it's just not his hometown. But I also think he's the best player available, like, regardless of the fit. Like, I'm pretty high on him. I was surprised when I looked at the list of guys that were already taken that I'd get a chance to pick Trey Lyles for the Raptors here. I'd be surprised if he was there on actuality in draft night.
That will not happen.
Yeah, like I can't see that happening. But I think he's super versatile. I think he's better than he showed playing out of position at Kentucky. But also, I think playing out of position at Kentucky will help him because I mean, look at the finals. Like we're watching everybody who plays power forward is having to switch out onto smaller guys and defend them. And it's not that he was amazing at guarding smaller guys at Kentucky, but at least he got the practice doing that. He has experience playing on the wing, and I think you know he's. All of the physical stuff, like he's big and he has long arms and he's also, he can put the ball on the floor on the perimeter a little bit. He's a versatile guy. I just think this is sort of a can't miss thing if you can get him at 20. And the fact that you might lose Amir Johnson, the fact that, I mean, Tyler Hansbrough we didn't mention, but he played minutes at the 4 and 5 spot and he's probably gone. I mean, maybe he's not gone. I don't know. I shouldn't say that.
No, James, he's gone. This is a Tyler Hansbrough free podcast.
He could be back. It's possible. But yeah, I think there will be potentially an opportunity for him to actually play in his first year. Even though Dwayne Casey isn't fond of giving rookies a whole bunch of rope. He does like Kentucky guys though. But yeah, I think I'm a fan of his game. I think he's a little underrated now in talking about the draft prospect. So I think they would be extraordinarily lucky if they had the opportunity to actually pick him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that he'll be available, like I said. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, this is exactly what Toronto could use. I mean, he's not going to step in immediately and replace Amir Johnson. He doesn't do all of the little things Amir Johnson does. Like, he's not a great screener yet. He does move well off ball, but he's not going to be a great defensive player immediately because he, you know, just didn't defend the post at all in college. Yeah. Like, at Kentucky, he was more of a perimeter defender, actually, and he didn't particularly play well there, but at the same time, it definitely helped him move a little bit better, I think, and it got him into maybe slightly better shape overall than he was coming into college, because that was one of the bigger questions about him. What kind of shape is he in? What kind of lateral movement does he have? And at Kentucky, he showed that he can at least have, you know, marginal lateral movement to where he's not going to be a minus defensively at his peak. I think that he'll at least be solid that point. So it's an interesting question, what kind of player he'll be, whether or not he can develop the jump shot offensively is the key. He was actually one of the worst shooters this year in all of college basketball as a catch and shoot guy, which is kind of terrifying whenever you're trying to commit to and develop a stretch four, but the mechanics are fine. I think a lot of it also probably had to do with the fact that the spacing at Kentucky was a little bit off because they were starting three guys that were 6'10" inside of a radius of about, you know, 20 feet, just because that's where the NCAA line is, and that makes it a lot more difficult to shoot. So,
yeah, Kentucky warps everything. Like when you're like watching tape on them, like it's the fact, like, you look at what the score is and the situation of the game, and you look at who's out there playing for them. It's like, I love the way that they're able to assemble talent, and it's fun to watch them run around and kill teams. But, like, it's weird when, like, now you see, like, Carl Towns doing his workout and, like, effortlessly hitting threes and doing these dribble moves on the perimeter and just doing stuff that you didn't see him do there because it didn't make sense for the team to have him do that. Yeah, like, yeah, so it's just, it's odd having to evaluate these players in that system where you know it's just going to be totally different when they get an NBA role. And that can mean a lot of different things. I think that with some players can mean they end up going way too high, and with other players, like probably in Lyle's case, could mean he ends up going way too low.
Yeah, that's definitely a chance, at least in this mock draft, is what happened. I mean, the thing with Kentucky is they warp things just spatially. Because they were bigger than every team in the NBA this year, but had a smaller amount of space to work with in the half-court offensive zone. And plus, Kentucky doesn't run a lot of pick-and-roll. They were actually one of the teams who ran the fewest pick-and-rolls this season. They were on the bottom 15% of the entire NCAA. So that kind of makes it difficult to even project what kind of players they'll develop to role-wise, like what they can do. So you're taking them more based on their package of skills and their package of, you know, potential talents. And that's a little bit worrisome to some people, but, you know, when you're talking about guys like Trey Lyles, that was a top 10 recruit, Willie Cauley-Stein, which might be the best defensive or most athletic 7-footer we've seen enter the draft in a long time.
Yeah.
And whenever you're talking about Carl Towns, who's just physically a freak, you know, it's pretty easy to do that, and it's pretty easy to get past that at this point.
Let's do an alternate, and we'll finish off with this, an alternate ending, number two, since I think all three of us pretty much agree that we'd be really surprised if Trey Lyles is going to be there. Sam, who do you think are some more realistic options for the Raptors? And James, what do you have? What are your thoughts on the guy Sam names?
All right, I'd throw out Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. If he gets to 20, I think he'll have a shot to get to 20. He's really, really good, really, really strong defensive player, and he'll be able to play not immediately, but pretty close to immediately. Another guy, Jaren Grant, could eventually be a replacement to Lou Williams if they decide not to sign him. Sam Decker could help fill that mold between the three and four spots that we've talked about pretty extensively at this point, even though, like I said last podcast, I think he's more of a tweener than he is versatile. Montrezl Harrell could be a pretty damn close replacement for what Amir Johnson brings. He's physical, he's strong, he sets screens, he calls out defenses. He does like all of those little things that you want out of a player. And then finally, I would say Justin Anderson's an interesting one. And then Christian Wood is also an interesting one. For me, if you want to go high upside, there are some definite concerns about the work ethic and some definite concerns about his body, whether or not he'll ever totally get into the shape that he needs to. But Christian Wood definitely has some pretty high upside and would be interesting.
Christian Wood totally fits the Masai Ujiri prototype, right? Like,
he does.
Just go for potential. Go for the guy that if it all works out, you look like a freaking genius. Because that's what would happen. I don't think, you know, like, I don't think he totally knows how to play basketball yet, but
nope.
he's a freak. And just his athleticism is off the charts. I think he has more potential than anybody else that's probably going to be available there. So if they did that, I would kind of laugh because I think it would be so Raptors. But then it would also be kind of exciting because if you can mold that into something special, then, like, you could end up with a huge steal. I think you mentioned a lot of names that they are considering. They brought in a lot of those guys for workouts here. Harrell was in last week. They RHJ and Justin Anderson came in the same workout. I think, you know, Grant is a really interesting one for me because I think, for me, they can't bring back Gravis Vasquez and Lou Williams. Like, that combination, they played them together. Like, just defensively, it did not work. I think there was just too many guys who wanted shots and wanted the ball. And I think you could see Lou Williams go elsewhere in free agency. I think you could also see Gravis Vasquez get traded because the contract that they signed him to last summer was a very tradable one. So I think they could be in the market for another point guard. And I think Grant would, if he is there, would slide right in. And I think he would be pretty good value at that spot. Decker, I mean, I think Decker would be a no-brainer if he's there. I just kind of doubt that he will be, but I would love that at 20 for them. And then, you know, Harrell was just in here for a workout, and I think, yeah, like you said, if they lose Amir, he could come in. He wouldn't replace him. He would become, like, the fourth big or something, but he would be a guy that, I mean, Dwayne Casey loves dudes that play that hard, and I think that would be something that he would get excited about. The only other, I'm not sure, did you mention R.J. Hunter? I think he might be a possibility.
I didn't. Hunter would be a good one, too.
And I think DeLon Wright, they had for a workout, but he didn't end up finishing the workout because something happened to him.
Hunter,
maybe he's an option.
I mentioned Hunter immediately is because I think he's a little bit similar to DeMar DeRozan. Skinny guys. He'd bring you a lot of what Terrence Ross brings you, and I think we've seen that, I mean, it works a little bit, but not to the extent that you'd want it to.
Yeah, fair. I wouldn't be surprised if they made that move, but we'll see. I think Rondé is an interesting one because he's kind of that versatile guy, and I think defense would get him on the floor potentially sooner than some of the other guys that they might take at that spot. But yeah, I think all those guys are options. For me, personally, like, of the guys that we talked about, it'd probably be Grant, because I'm not even, like, in my mind, if Decker was there, I would be shocked.
Yeah, I'm not particularly high on Sam Decker, as we've mentioned throughout the podcast. I don't know that I need to go into it again.
just rip him again!
Yeah, because I really, really like Sam Decker. Like, the human, I've met him, I've talked to him in the locker room after the Final Four. He's one of the funniest, like, most likable guys that you will meet.
Yeah.
And I hate having to talk about his game, because I don't really like his game all that much.
Well, Sam, you're a real jerk.
Decker, you're a great human. Sorry.
His name's Sam, so, you know.
It's a brotherhood.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're going against the person with the same name of you. Wow, you are awful.
Yeah, I can't help it. Sorry.
All right, James, I think we've taken enough of your time here. You have anything you want to get out there that you want people to see and check out? As I know, NBA Finals is actually still going, maybe still be going on when people listen to this.
Just CBSSports.com, the NBA section, the I Am Basketball podcast. Zach Harper does them almost every day, and I'm on them about half the time. But they're worth listening to every time. That would be the only thing that I can think of to plug right now. Oh, I can plug this. I did a profile on Cameron Payne, who didn't come up in this conversation because his value has just gone crazy in the past couple of months. But you
crazy
can read that.
Crazy is the perfect way to put that.
You can read that on CBSSports.com, and I really like talking to him. I'm pretty high on him. I think it's, like, I certainly didn't expect him to get workouts with, like, the Lakers and the Knicks, but I think he'll be a good player, and I think he has a cool story. So that would be the one big draft-related thing that I've done recently.
Right.
I will note that you should read that. James's profile is awesome. It's amazing. Cameron Payne is an awesome person to talk to. I agree with him whenever I talk to him at Combine. Just read it. It's great. Even if I'm not the highest on Cam Payne in general.
Thank you.
James is not bad at writing. He might do that thing for a living. So I do agree. Everyone should go read that. That will, James, thank you very much. Appreciate you taking time out. And that's another edition of the Amateur Hour Podcast Mock Draft.